Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We are brought to you by the Tough Man Triathlon Series, by OSCA Wellness, the coolest new product in pain relief. RunCatalina.com, Catalina Eco Marathon, coming up on Saturday, November 19th. Our Challenged Athletes Foundation, where we've raised over $80 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. And check us out on Babbittville.com, on iTunes, and definitely subscribe to our newsletter. Our next guest, one of our favorite people in the world. He has his movie, Ultra Marathon Man, his book, Ultra Marathon Man. He ran 50 marathons in 50 days in 50 states, but more importantly, has a new book out, The Road to Sparta, Reliving the Ancient Battle and Epic Run that inspired the world's greatest foot race, Mr. Dean Karnazes. Dean, how the heck you doing?
I'm well, Bob. Thank you very much for having me back on, and thank you for that very gracious introduction.
You know, it's always so fun, because I know that everything you do leads from passion, and you're just passion for this amazing sport of running and how you can explore the world through it. What led to, obviously, your family's from Greece, and was that the sort of the motivation for doing, creating Road to Sparta?
Well, you know, my ancestry is part of the motivation, but the other part was just a curiosity on, you know, where did the marathon come from? I mean, what is the origins? What's the evolution and genesis of, you know, of this thing we all love to do, run 26.2 miles? And I wanted to learn all about it and the reality and the mythology surrounding the marathon.
So when we flash back to 490 BCE, Pheidippides ran 36 hours from Athens to Sparta to help to seek help in defending Athens from the Persian invasion. And when you look to today, is that you're trying to recreate what happened back then?
Well, you know, I mean, I'm sure a lot of the listeners are thinking, hold on, he ran how far? You know, in 36 hours? That's a long time to run 26.2 miles. But, you know, the reality, and, you know, you're kind of an insider, you know this, is that he ran 153 miles
yep.
from Athens to Sparta. And it kind of piqued my curiosity, like, okay, well, why is it a marathon, 153
yeah.
miles? So I wanted, one, to, you know, recreate and kind of reimagine the route that he followed 2,500 years ago. And I was able to do that largely by reconstructing some of his route, working with ancient historians. Modern scholars that you know used ancient historians as guideposts. So I learned, you know, that the reality of the marathon is that it's really an ultra marathon.
Well, it's when you're talking basically six full marathons under 36 hours.
And that's, you know, the modern incarnation of that is the race called the Spartathlon, which I think you're aware of this
yes.
race, and it's one of the most grueling contests on earth. And, you know, we're running it using modern foods and, you know, modern clothing and great footwear. I mean, here this guy 2,500 years ago ran it, you know, basically barefoot in a modified toga, eating, you know, figs and olives and cured meat and pastilli along the way. It's just remarkable. And he was able to accomplish something that a lot of modern-day elite ultramarathons can't do, and he did it 2,500 years ago.
And so while you were doing this, were you trying to eat and drink the way that that he would have back then?
I did. In fact, 9 months prior to this the Spartathlon race, I trained using only figs and olives and cured meat and this stuff I refer to. It's called pastilli. It's basically ground up sesame seeds and honey. So it's almost like an energy gel, like a paste. And that's what I trained with, and that's actually what I did the race with as well, and just water, no electrolyte replenishment of any sort.
So how much time went into planning this? Because when we talk about back in the day, the 50 marathons, 50 days, 50 states, the running part was almost a little bit of a reprieve for you. Besides the real work was all the planning, the logistics, and getting from point A to point B. How much planning went into this?
You know, a lot, just because it's overseas. So I had to travel to Greece, over the course of 4 years, traveling to Greece and dissecting parts of the course, and looking at the historical record and, you know, trying to figure out what happened here and possibly why, and seeing things that, you know, that there's actually spring. There's a lot of spring water, even in Greece in the middle of summer when it's hot and, you know, very barren. There's water sources. There's a lot of fruit that can be foraged along the way. So it required, you know, years of kind of planning and preparation and multiple trips to Greece to piece things together.
And did you do, when you did the run itself, was the Spartathlon a separate entity, or did you do your run as part of the Spartathlon?
I did bits and pieces of my run, and what I learned is that I couldn't possibly recreate. I don't want to be a spoiler with the book, but I couldn't possibly recreate the entire route because there's too many possibilities. There were too many goat trails and too many there's various paths that someone can take. You know, bushwhacking. Think if you're going to go run in the, you know, out in the Sierra,
right?
To get from point A to point B as quickly as possible. You know, do you run over the top of a mountain, or do you circumvent it, you know, avoid the elevation gain and descent, but, on a flat earth course, but spend more, you know, more time running? You know, there's a lot of decisions like that that would have been made on the fly, and I just couldn't do that. So I ran portions of what he ran, the ancient path, but then I decided, you know, just to get a taste of really, you know, 36 hours running, although a lot of it was on the road, just to sign up for the Spartathlon, actually run the Spartathlon as well.
So you're going to your homeland in Greece, and Greece is obviously very challenged economically, they're politically. There's a lot of things happening. The amount of time you spent over there, what did you learn about your country?
You got to read the book. I mean,
that
Greece is such a conflicted place, and it's so contradictory. I mean, all of the things you just said are true. But then the Greek spirit lives large. You just can't figure it out. Like, how in the midst of this crippling economic reform are people all of a sudden just willing to say screw it and, you know, have a shot of ouzo and start Greek dancing in the street? I mean, the Greeks, they're unlike, it's a separate universe unto itself and kind of an uplifting universe.
What were there relatives that you had not met before, or, you know, different family members that you connected with and became close to through this?
Across the globe, including Australia, because a lot of my family migrated from Greece to Australia.
Huh.
Yeah, and I went to these villages where, my God, you look at these people's legs, and every one of them, they're not athletes. In fact, most of them are not even in very good shape. But their legs are just chiseled. I mean, you look at their calves, and you're like, my God, this person has a calf.
That's where you get it from, yeah.
It looks like an inverted papaya, and, you know, why? And everyone in these villages looks like this.
So what did you, when you do something like this, and this is a little different because it's a little different from the other things you've done, because this is more personal. This is a personal journey. Were there points during this where you were discouraged, where you thought, gosh, I don't know if I can do this?
Oh, there are plenty of points. In fact, you know, the Spartathlon was the most difficult race I've ever done. And, you know, I've done a lot of stuff, Bob.
Really? It was the most difficult. Why?
Because I bonked. I mean, I basically, at the halfway point, I was cooked. And I couldn't eat, for the last 75 miles of this race, I didn't eat a single piece of food. All I drank was warm water for 75 miles while I'm already just, you know, laid out. So
why? Because you didn't have the right food, or you just mentally, you just sort of forgot to eat?
No, I was just kind of I had this, you know, this ancient food I was training with, and it was just making me nauseous. And, you know, I really wanted to get as much as I could into the head of this guy 2,500 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, how did he feel? How was he able to grovel through it and remain, you know, coherent? So I really pushed myself with that. I mean, there were so many points where I just wanted, like, a piece of pizza or something. Because, you know, you can only eat so many figs and so many, you know, figs in 24 hours, it creates some problems.
You know, it's so funny. I remember Dave Scott, his early Ironman races, was always eating figs. And we were like, what the hell? I know they're supposed to be a pretty good food, but do you get pretty sick of figs?
Well, I mean, they taste great on the way in, but, you know, I don't know. Geez, Dave, you know. I guess an Ironman only lasted 8.5 hours, so maybe, you know. But for me, I'm out there running for 36 hours. You got to watch what you're putting in your stomach and how much fiber is there.
So is the book available now?
The book released on October 25th. So
okay.
It's out. People can purchase it now.
In just usual spots? Go to Amazon, go wherever. You know,
Amazon.
Yeah.
Borders. I'm sorry, Barnes & Noble.
Yep.
Barnes & Noble, all of the indie stores as well. Like, you know, down in La Jolla, Warwick's is a great independent bookseller, and
yes.
I love supporting the independents.
Will you, you'll be doing a book tour?
Yeah, I'm doing a tour. I've already done a few cities. I was just back at the New York City Marathon, so I did some signings in New York City.
Oh, nice. And for next year, because the last time we chatted, we were talking about the ultimate goal, which was a marathon in every country. And is that something you're still trying to plan?
That is something that it's looking more. I know we've been talking about this. You said last interview.
I was going to say last five interviews.
Right?
Yeah,
this thing is killing me, but it's looking more promising than ever. I've got a really strong relationship with the U.S. Department of State. They sent me as an athlete ambassador to Central Asia this
really?
Past summer. Yeah, I was the first sports envoy, the first runner, the first time they've ever done anything like this. And I ran across Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan, and Kazakhstan to celebrate 25 years of diplomatic relations between these countries and
wow.
the U.S. Yeah.
That is very cool.
To be an athlete ambassador. Yeah, it was an incredible experience.
Well, you've found over the years that running unites people, right? There's something about it. I remember when you ran across the U.S., all these kids just love to run, and there's something about the sport that transcends cultures, it transcends everything. When you did this across the stands, what was the best part about that?
This is 2 weeks of running. I mean, I ran 525 kilometers, and, you know, some nights I was staying in incredibly opulent, you know, hotels.
Yeah.
Other nights I was staying in yurts out in the middle of nowhere. But they're still very nomadic culture. So every time I'd run into these cities, these townships,
right.
there'd be a party for me. I mean, and not just a party. I mean, every single person who
really?
Lived in this township would come out on the street. Bands would be playing. They'd be in traditional dress, dancing. And they prepare food for an arriving guest. I mean, every place I went to, and the State Department briefed me. They said, you know, to be polite, you just have to try everything they offer you.
Oh.
And I mean, Bob, I'd run in. I'm one guy.
Right.
I mean, they prepared food for Genghis Khan and this whole envoy. I mean, there was so much food, and I mean, yeah, horse meat. Pastries, everything you can imagine. I had to sample a little bit of all of it. And their traditional drink there is
yeah.
this thing called kumus. And so when the first thing I would do when I came to town is all the dignitaries would be standing there with this, it looks like half a coconut. So a little cup filled with this white liquid called kumus. And the first thing you do when you get there is you drink the kumus. Kumus is warm fermented horse milk.
Oh, God.
It was like drinking feta cheese. I mean, it was like drinking Parmesan cheese. It was so strong. And, here I am running in 110-degree temperatures, you know, drenched in sweat. And the first thing I got to drink is this warm horse milk.
Oh, my God. That just sounds horrific. Did you have any idea that it was going to be – I mean, usually you go and run and a few people notice, oh, yeah, there's this guy's running in the town. But you're talking – every city is – you're like the conquering hero running in the town, and they're all there excited for this guy running into their village.
Oh, I mean, 90% of the people that saw me, that I interacted with, had
yeah.
never seen an American before.
Wow.
And here's this guy in colorful running gear, you know, half naked, running through their township. I mean, they were, I blew some minds. And they blew mine as well, because, like you said, I had probably 10,000 people in total run with me along the way. Some just military guys running in their boots, others, you know, local high schools with track kids who are actually fit and, you know, good runners. So it really was an incredible experience. And, you know, Uzbekistan is right above Afghanistan, and I was really worried about security.
Oh, yeah.
And all they were asking me is, man, aren't you worried about living in America? Like, all we hear about is fighting. You know, the people are killing the police. And
Yeah.
Aren't you afraid to live in America? I thought, oh, that's kind of...
I've heard a few things about Afghanistan that it's not really the safest place in the world. So what did you run in when you were running in the Spartathlon and running across Greece? Did you wear traditional running shoes, or did you run in some sort of Greek running gear from back in the day?
I tested that idea, and I ran the Silicon Valley Marathon barefoot and in a Greek toga. Kind of like what Wardian did with, you know, his Elvis suit, but this was a traditional toga, and it at 26.2 miles is as far as I could go in this thing.
Yeah.
It was not comfortable to run in, so I tried it out, but during the actual Spartathlon, I wore, you know, just regular running gear.
Yeah, is what you should. So, like, you've always got some new things planned, and besides the run across the world, right? Every country of the world. And that's changing every day. Like, there's a new country, and one one comes in, one goes out. You know, it's like 208, 210. We really don't know. So I know you always have another thing going on besides that. That's the biggie, and that's sort of in the backdrop. What's primary for 2017?
I think that's going to consume most of my year. I mean, I say that, but I've already, you know, I've gotten invitations to run in across Bulgaria. I mean, I've got a ton of invitations to do kind of exotic things that most people would say, wow, this is a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
Yeah.
But I've had so many of
them. You've
had
a lot of them, yeah.
Yeah. I just think that, you know, my team met with the State Department this morning, so they were in Washington, D.C., the logistics team that's putting together the run across the marathon in every country of the world in 1 year. So I'm going to debrief with them tomorrow, and this thing is looking really, really promising. I mean, they flew from Dallas, where they're based, to Washington, D.C., and had a meeting.
Wow. Oh, so this is something that could be a 2017 initiative.
Well, November. The plan is to start with the New York City Marathon in November 2017, which is, you know, that's a year from now.
But that's what it's going to take, at least that, to get everything all buttoned up.
It's been 5 years, Bob.
Wow.
So, I mean, this has been a tough one.
Well, and the thing is, when you talk like New York City Marathon, those are the easy ones, right? You're going to run a marathon that somebody's putting on. It's when you're going to Bulgaria and finding a place to run and finding an existing course or creating your own. That's where the real challenge is, right?
Yeah. So, you know, again, for the listeners, the idea is to run a marathon in every country of the world in a one-year time span. And
yes.
The UN right now recognizes 203 countries, and of those, 109 actually have organized marathons.
Oh,
but
all
for
right.
the rest, you're right. It's going to be GPSing a route because there is no marathon in those countries.
So they have no marathon at all. Does it surprise you when you go in? You said you just did all the stands. When you go up someplace that they've never seen a runner before, does it blow you away that these folks have never seen a runner before?
You know, the looks you get, it's almost like people are puzzled. Like, I don't know what, I mean, I wish I could interview just some of the villagers, you know, and what they really thought, because they just look at you as though you're a ghost of some sort.
Like what are you running to? What are you running from? There's got to be a reason. I remember when Meb first moved here, when he was like 12, and he saw people running in Morley Field going, there's no ball. What are they doing? It just didn't make sense from people from other parts of the world to just run for the sake of running. Doesn't seem to resonate.
Well, a lot of cultures are not as developed as we are, so the idea of recreational running, they haven't come that far. So when they see someone who's running, who's just doing it kind of for pleasure or just for a purpose, I don't know how it resonates with them, because people don't just run in Kyrgyzstan. I mean... You know, they're nomadic. I mean, they live in a yurt. They don't run for pleasure, and they've never been exposed to a runner. So you're right. I wonder what they thought.
So when you finished the book, Road to Sparta, and you finished this experience, did you feel a closer connection with Greece than you had before?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, I wanted to learn about Pheidippides, and in the process, I really learned about myself. And I think that that theme comes through in the book more strongly than anything else, and that is, it's a book about self-discovery.
Right.
And I hope it compels other people to look into their, you know, to their lineage, because it was really a fascinating, it was almost like, you know, Ancestry.com. It was really a fascinating, you know, travel backwards and meeting people that, you know, were relatives of mine that I look exactly like or I've never met before.
That is the coolest thing. You know, and what's really fun about that is getting to see parts of your country that you never would see otherwise.
Well, and the other thing is that is so amazing is that, you know, things have changed in 2,500 years in Greece.
You think?
But what really struck me is how much has not changed. I mean, you get outside of the, you know, the big cities like Athens.
Yeah.
And it's still as it was, you know, when Socrates roamed around. It's amazing how little has changed in that country.
And as like you said, the country is dealing with, they're dealing with the economic issues, political issues. They've got so much going on, but they still could embrace the self-discovery and the fact that you were doing something to bring attention to, you know, the marathon, really. The marathon started there. Pheidippides ran the first marathon, and you were reliving that experience, and you felt embraced by the country?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the people welcome me as one of their own, if not a symbol of all things Greek. In so many ways, I'm more Greek than most of the people I meet in Greece, in that, you know, I follow a traditional, you know, Greek Mediterranean diet. I'm really, really, you know, I'm an athlete. I believe in physical fitness as part of, you know, what they call arete, mind, body, and spirit in alignment. I think that without a physical presence, without physical health, you really don't have much else. And, you know, these sort of ancient philosophies have been lost in the generations, you know, in Greece. And when they see me, it brings back those same Greek ideals. You know, the Greek people struggle under their historical narrative, probably like no other people. I mean, how do you live up to being the cradle of democracy?
Right.
You know, how do you live up to what you were, to your greatness, you know, to being, you know, the Spartans? And I think that when they see me, it gives them hope.
Love that. The book is called The Road to Sparta, Reliving the Ancient Battle and Epic Run that Inspired the World's Greatest Foot Race. And more importantly, it was a run of self-discovery, Dean Karnazes, across Greece. So, Dean, the book is out now, and people can get it anywhere. I know you'll be in San Diego, and you'll be throughout the West Coast doing book tours, and people can go on your website and find that information?
Yeah, they can just go to ultramarathon.com, and they can see where my next appearance is.
Love it.
And talk.
Dean, as always, thank you so much for taking time and being such a class act.
Well, thank you, Bob, and I'll finish with Opa.
Opa! Exactly. We are brought to you by Tough Man Triathlon Series, OSCA Wellness, RunCatalina.com, the Catalina Eco Marathon. Believe it or not, Dean ran that first ever Catalina Eco Marathon. I think that was over 10 years ago. And to show you what a special dude this guy is, I said, hey, Dean, we're going to put on this new marathon, Catalina Eco Marathon. Why don't you come over and run? He says, well, what if I run from your office in Solana Beach to Long Beach? It's like 9,500 miles. Then I'll paddle over to the start, and then I'll run the marathon. I'm like, okay. And that's exactly what Dean did to help promote that first ever Catalina Eco Marathon, which now is a very well-established marathon.
And it's a great, I'll plug that marathon because it is terrific. If you haven't run in Catalina, I mean, it is a terrific, terrific course.
It really is.
It's not easy.
No, 6,000 feet of climbing. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's a remarkable, yeah. And, you know, that first year running that, I think I'm the only person in history that's run a marathon while being seasick.
Yes. I know.
That was a long paddle.
That was a long. And I'm like, let's see, what would be the best thing to do the day before a marathon? I know, cramp my legs up in a kayak for about 9 hours. That'll be a really good way. Yeah, and we've got actually the Catalina Marathon, the original Catalina, coming up in March. It's the 40th anniversary, believe it or not. 40th anniversary of Catalina coming up in March. We might need to see if we can get the ultramarathon man out there to do that one. That would be pretty fun, if he's not traveling the world.
Just don't make me swim there, and we're
no.
good.
No, yeah, you're good. You're good. Again, Dean Karnazes has been our guest, and we, we're also brought to you by Challenge Athletes Foundation. We've raised over $80 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life. Check us out on Babbittville.com, on iTunes. Check out our newsletter, and as always, endurance lives here.